Chapter 7, A User's Guide to the Universe. When something is true, it's not unusual to find that the truth shows up in a number of different places and in a number of different ways. The biblical flood offers a perfect example. Throughout history and cultures, the story of a vast flood is recounted around the world, playing out on different continents and in different languages and involving different people. The details and the outcome are nearly identical. It's this consistent theme, and the evidence that supports it, that leads us to believe that at some point in our distant past, a great flood actually occurred. Well, similar to the way the flood account appears in many traditions, the birth of the universe and the story of our origins is recounted with remarkable consistency in different worldviews. Australia's Aboriginal inhabitants, for example, can be traced back through a continuous bloodline that began at least 50,000 years ago and maybe even before. Throughout that vast period of time, their creation story has remained precisely the same. In much the same way, new theories suggest that an ancient programmer fashioned our world, the Aborigines describe what they call the Wangina, the ancestral beings that created this world by dreaming it into existence. The common theme that weaves such ancient accounts together is the description of our world as a dream. From the Hindu cosmology that describes the universe as a dream of Vishnu, to the Kalahari of South Africa who say that we're dreaming our own existence right now, spiritual traditions describe our reality as the shadow of another world, one that's even more real than this one. And what I find so interesting is that from story to story and telling to telling, the theme doesn't really change. Regardless of when they began and how they end, the idea of us living in an illusionary world is a constant, even in the oldest accounts of creation. Well, using different metaphors in different languages almost universally, the wisdom traditions of our past describe our everyday world as just that, the shadow or the projection of things that actually begin somewhere else. And now, we must include the evidence of our universe as a simulation among those metaphors and languages. When we think about such a possibility, it's not really so different from the ideas that form the basis for nearly every major spiritual tradition today. During his lifetime, the pioneering physicist David Bohm offered a similar worldview, only he did it in modern language. Through terms such as the implicate order and the explicate order, Bohm saw our world as the shadow or the projection of events that are actually happening somewhere else. He viewed that somewhere else as a deeper reality from which the events of our world emerge. Similar to the teachings of indigenous traditions, Bohm's work demonstrated that this other realm is very real, perhaps even more real than our world. Again, it's just that we can't see it from where we are right now. The theme that all of the traditions share is that we're living, testing, training, and preparing ourselves in a temporary world here on Earth for something that's yet to come in a realm that we've yet to see. While the stories of precisely what that something is and how we get there may vary between traditions, all seem to deal with the power of belief and our ability to believe our heart's desires into existence. From this perspective, when we find ourselves in situations that challenge and test us, we're actually honing our skills of belief for use in a place that's identified by names that range from nirvana in the fifth world to higher dimensions in heaven. In the event that we fail to master those forces here, however, we're given another opportunity under even more intense conditions in another dream that the Christian traditions simply call hell. It's from these age-old beliefs that the idea of life as a simulation gets really interesting. Did the great programmer leave us a manual? If we're really living in a huge, ancient, and ongoing computer-generated universe, then the question that comes to mind most frequently is who created it? Who could be responsible for such a grand cosmic experience? Well, the clue to such an answer may lie in identifying who it is that most benefits from the experience. Who is better off by mastering the rules of our world? Well, the answer is obvious, yet mysterious. It's those experiencing the simulation itself. It's us. We may just discover that we're the great programmers that have created this practice world for ourselves. We may find that we've agreed to immerse ourselves in the feedback loop of a simulation to master the language of our hearts. What better way to learn how to live in a place that we've never been to, yet may find ourselves in soon? Is it possible that this is what the new age, the shift of the ages, the 2012 end date in the ancient calendars are all about? Well, if this is the case, then it makes even more sense to look within the mystery of what we've created to find the answers and the rules of our creation. As mentioned earlier, whether we're actually in a simulated place or we simply use it as a metaphor for what we experience as life makes little difference from this perspective. What's important here is that real or virtual, we're here now, and the rules of here and now are what life is all about and what we're learning to master. Jürgen Schmidhuber of Switzerland's Dalmau Institute for Artificial Intelligence is one of the leading proponents suggesting that our world is the result of an ancient cosmic computer, lacking only the words that say, in a galaxy far, far away. Schmidhuber leaves little doubt in our minds as to how he believes our universe began. He says that a long time ago, the great programmer wrote a program that runs all possible universes on his big computer. In his paper, titled A Computer Scientist's View of Life, the Universe, and Everything, he offers a technical yet compelling argument, proposing that it's more likely that we are living in a virtual reality than not. So what does such an analysis mean? If we're here in a world of infinite possibilities to master what it means to be in such a place, did anyone leave us the instructions? Did Schmidhuber's great programmer leave us a user's manual? And if so, would we even recognize it if we found it? In Chapter 1, I shared the story of my experience of the native guide that said the best way to hide something is to keep it in plain sight. Maybe this time-tested truth applies so universally that it even tells us where to look for the user's guide to the universe. Maybe the user's manual to reality is hidden within the experiences of our everyday world. What better way to show how a reflected universe works than to have the instant feedback of relationships, abundance, health, and joy, or the lack of all these things, so that we can see what works and what doesn't? We can try this way of being or that way of being, and if we have the wisdom to recognize how our world changes when we change our beliefs, then we have an instant user's guide to the universe as a lifetime of experience. It all comes down to patterns of energy, how they interact, and how we affect those patterns with our beliefs. Prayer is a program. In the previous chapters, we've explored the discoveries and traditions reminding us that belief, as well as the way we feel about our belief, is the language that makes things happen in the world. The beauty of belief is that we don't have to understand it to benefit from it in our lives, and this is the message of the masters from our past. In the words of their time, teachers such as Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, native elders, and others did their very best to share the secret that frees us from being victims of life. In a very real sense, they were the master programmers of consciousness as well as the architects of belief, and they didn't try to keep the secret of rearranging atoms to make miracles possible to themselves. They taught us the code to do the same things and to become programmers of reality as well. We've inherited their teachings. To experience such powerful beliefs, the masters of times past chose just the right words, designed to elicit just the right feelings, to create precisely the right effects. Today, we call their belief programs prayers. And from all that we now know, we can think of their prayers as literal instructions to consciousness. When we speak the words of the prayer codes, they're designed to create the heart-based beliefs of healing and miracles. The Lord's Prayer is a beautiful example of just what I mean here. As we examine this powerful prayer from the perspective of a program, you'll notice the words fall into the precise framework of the computer programs that we described in Chapter 2. In what may well be the oldest and most widely documented description of such a program, Jesus left us a template describing how we may speak to the quantum essence of the universe and how to do so in a way that the universe recognizes. In a language that's as clear and elegant today as it was 2,000 years ago, Jesus begins his program and instructions to the universe by stating to the user simply and directly just how the code is to be used. He began his instructions by simply saying, "After this manner, therefore, pray ye." The language is important here. Clearly, he didn't say only to pray using these exact words. Rather, he invited us to pray like this, or in this way, or after this manner. He's telling us that we have options. Following his admonition, he stated the words of the program designed to communicate our heart's desire to the universe. Although the Lord's Prayer may already be familiar to you, let's examine it through the eyes of a cosmic programmer, and when we do, the prayer clearly falls into the three familiar categories of computer commands that we explored earlier: the begin command, the work command, and the completion command. The code begins with the familiar words, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." This group of statements clearly marks the start or the beginning of our consciousness code. The words are not asking us to do anything or to be anything. They are statements of adoration, acknowledging the power of the force that we're about to access. From the perspective of prayer as a program, when we say them, they're designed to inspire in us a feeling of openness and greatness. It's this outwelling of feeling that opens our hearts to the possibilities of the quantum field. And in doing so, it leaves us with a very different feeling from the words in the next part of the code. Part 2 of the code reads, "Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." These statements are the work commands. Rather than inspiring us with a feeling that we're about to commune with the universe as the begin commands do, they provide the action for the prayer to accomplish. In this case, that action is the feeling that comes from being relieved of the burdens identified in the prayer. When we believe that we have everything that we need for our families and ourselves, we feel a sense of relief. When we feel that we're free of the tension between us and those to whom we're beholden, then we feel that we're being led on the right path and we're enveloped in a healing sense of peace and gratitude. This is the work that the program is designed to accomplish, and this work leads us into the completion commands that follow. The last part of the prayer code reads, "For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." With the completion command statements, once again, there's a definite shift in their tone and sense. They're no longer telling our program what to do. They're designed to provide a sense of closure. When we say them, we feel that completion as a release in our body. Our prayer is not left lingering as an open-ended proposition. Rather, it has an ending. It's clean, clear, and complete. When we declare that the universe is in the hands of a greater power, and we feel that we are aligned with that power to bring our prayers to life, we find that sense of empowerment. After using this template, we know that our prayer has been accomplished. The beauty of the Lord's Prayer is its tradition and its simplicity. Through a blueprint that has changed little in over 2,000 years, we're given the structure for a cosmic code to open the field of infinite possibilities. Just as the code of a computer program links us with the unseen mechanisms that allow the computer to do what it does, the words of this prayer are designed to create the conditions that link us with the forces of creation. Within the words of the prayer, we find the great secret to programming the universe, and it's hidden in plain sight. So try this for yourself. Look at the great prayers of other traditions. See for yourself if and how their authors have used the template of begin, work, and completion commands that we see in the Lord's Prayer to speak to the universe with their code.